listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kolula. We're here with another quarantine episode of Wake Up Hollywood. I was lost there for a minute, but we're just going to jump right into this interview. Tonight we've got Nicholas Woods, writer, director, and producer of a great new indie flick called Echoes of Violence. Say hello, Nicholas. How are you, man?
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
Of course. We share the same name. It's the same roots. I don't know if you know.
Yes, exactly.
But your name means victorious people, if you didn't know that.
All right. Well, that is exactly Woo-hoo! What I wanted to hear. All right. Hell yeah.
So tell me how you got into film. What was the movie first that made you want to make movies? Let's go back from the very beginning before we talk about the movie.
Oh, man. That's a good question. The movie that I saw when I was a kid, I saw it pretty young, that really stuck with me was Jaws. And I still go back. I'm like, that is just a classic, great, great goddamn – gosh darn movie.
You can swear, don't worry.
Okay, as the radio word staring at me, and I just cut myself off quick. Yeah, it's a great goddamn movie. And that made me want to start looking into, started the bug, I guess, you know, and I started filming young, making different short films and stuff. And then I went to college to take it seriously. And that's where I definitely... it's called Chapman University, Dodge College, so they're in Orange County. Yeah, very, very good up-and-coming film school. Very happy to have gone there. I've had a great experience. And just kept pushing, you know, trying to make, more interesting stuff, more, keep pushing the material in different ways. And now this is my second film since I've been out in L.A. about 5 years. And, yeah, it's the second film. First one was a horror film called The Axiom. And now we've taken a sharp right turn into a crime drama revenge story that we got here, Echoes of Violence.
And how long did it take for you to write the screenplay? If it looks like I'm you're actually on my right when I'm looking. So if it looks like I'm looking at the right, I'm not bored. I'm just like looking at you over here and looking straight at the camera. But how long did it take for you to write the screenplay?
Oh man, screenplays take a. This one was actually the quickest turnaround time because we had access to a Panavision grant to make the film, and the grant was expiring. So somebody came to us with this opportunity and was like, "Hey, we got this grant that's expiring," and I had been toying around, getting other projects off the ground, and I was like, fuck it, let's go make another, film for, just us, something small that we can, it always starts small and you think it's just going to be you and like another person. And then it just starts growing and people want to be a part of it and get into it. And it just, sort of took off from there. But the script probably took, I want to say, 3 weeks before I started sharing it, which is fucking really quick. And that's when I started sharing it with production people to start getting it going. And then I just kept reworking it for 2 or 3 months. But I have scripts that I work on, typically for a year, before I start getting out there. But since that's, typically you're getting a lot of money for those sort of projects, this one that we were going to be raising ourselves and getting this camera package for free, we were pretty much ready to go. So yeah, we spent a lot of time in rehearsals and kind of figuring stuff out. But so it was a really collaborative process too, kind of diving into the characters with the actors and pulling things from their real life and stuff, and really trying to, given the set of circumstances of the fiction parts that I wrote, trying to dive deep with these actors and pull from their real life experiences. And that was really cool.
How many rewrites did you have to do? Like you said, start to finish, the screenplay took 3 weeks, or did you finish it in like a week and you were doing rewrites the next 2 weeks?
No, it took like 3 full weeks just to really, flesh it out. And I try to just, start to stop all the way to the end when you're writing something and just, let yourself be creative and not know exactly where you're going with something, which is cool. And I think any sort of art form that you're creating is, you go in there with an idea of something maybe you want to try, but what ends up coming out can be really different. And this one for sure was very different. I didn't know. I gave myself a set of circumstances with this, this immigrant who wants to travel from Sedona to Los Angeles to find this immigration lawyer who
such a great
ruined her life.
Like, as soon as your movie does a couple of amazing things. First, the first 5 minutes just grab you. It just like pulls you in and it keeps on grabbing you and pulling you in. So like, that's the hardest, I think, 5 minutes. I mean, I've gone to Sundance, right? I'm a musician, so I play a lot of years. I've played a lot of years at Sundance and seen a lot of really great movies and really shit movies. And you can sit through the first 5 minutes and kind of know, okay, is this going to grab my attention, or is it at least captivating enough for me to wonder if it's going to get me at the end or get me into the middle of the movie? You know, act two 100%. Is the hardest. So it's like your movie does that. It accomplishes that right away. It's like, it just pulls you in. The setting is great. How did you decide on Sedona, which is a city I love, by the way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm from Arizona. So I had to also, which was also different with this film, I'm writing to locations that I knew I had access to. So we had a connection that had this random property that in the movie, the character is trying to sell this leasing office that's in the middle of the Sedona Desert. That's actually what the property was. Somebody just bought the last piece of property was the leasing office that was used to buy all the other property around. And I always thought that was random and really kind of interesting. And, would just be, let's put that in his character. So a lot of it came like that. And, I mean, you know, again, we're shooting sort of a small team, small, budget, you know, you want to sort of utilize what you have and what sort of is around you. And we knew, okay, it's going to be tough to get everyone to Sedona and do this whole thing. But if we can pull it off, it's going to be a really beautiful backdrop and hopefully give people something different than they haven't seen. You know, there's not a lot of modern movies that take place in Sedona. So
which is crazy. It's like such an amazing backdrop, you know, and it's like it becomes a character, which I love. It's like a character in your movie because it's like this amazing – you know, vibe. And it's like the desert kind of has like a lot of mystery and intrigue just on its own. So it's like the fact that you have this as part of this, you know, story, it's kind of clever. I don't know if that was intentional, but it definitely pulls you in just with the back, you know, the scenic part of it. But then it's also, you know, the desert has all these like, you know, different pathways that lead to different parts of any story, and your story does the same thing. How did you kind of assemble the cast? Like, who was the first person that you were like, this person's got to be the lead, or this person's got to be in it?
The first person that I started getting, who was sort of pushing me to write and get this thing going, was the actor who plays the hitman who is brought, who's bringing the immigration, the immigrant out to the desert on behalf of the immigration lawyer to kill her. And so the hitman, played by Kellen, the character's name is Kellen. He's played by Chase Cargill. Now he's a great LA actor, in the theater scene here. He's a part of the prestigious Road Theater Company. I saw him in a play with, Sam Anderson, who plays his dad in the film. Sam Anderson is a amazingly accomplished actor. A lot of people know him from Lost, Justified. He's just was great. I saw them both in this play. But, I mean, Chase, I was like, okay, I've got this idea for you. So we started. And then I had been friends with Michaela, who plays the Michaela Russell. She plays the immigrant. I'd been friends with her for a while, and she was going through an immigration process herself. She's coming here from South Africa.
Right.
And so before
actually from South Africa, because the accent was awesome.
Exactly. We just sort of, again, we're pushing and pulling from her real life too. And I mean, while I was speaking with her about her immigration process, I'm asking her, hey, like, you know, how are things going? And she's like, well, I just gave this immigration lawyer all my money and he hasn't like responded in 3 weeks. Haven't heard from him. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. And I got really worried for her. So I go on my own and I'm doing some research, like, have immigration lawyers ever like screwed over their clients before or anything? I'm thinking like scams and a whole trove of different, yes, money scams, but also because, you know, immigrants being so vulnerable and not having access to a lot of money, tons of sex trafficking and sex crimes and manipulation.
So that's a real thing.
Yeah. That's yes, crazy. Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's what we wanted to touch upon. And, you know, we took it obviously in a fictitious element, drawing from some things that we had read about and heard about, and then Michaela's own experience coming over here from South Africa, which has got its own rich history. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. We wanted to really get into the subtlety of some of this. You know what I mean? That's, people think sometimes sex trafficking is this, can be this, you know, big monstrous, like, you know, people necessarily chained up in stockyards and things, and you can see in cliche movies and stuff, but it's actually can come down to really subtle evil and deception by these just horrible people. And it can be a lot more casual than you think. And so those were what we had read about, and we were like, yeah, let's kind of put this into the movie. So
what, yeah, I also kind of dove deep there. Like, I think you think, you know, I think most people think when they think of sex trafficking, they think it's like this underground crime scene that is not white collar. And so to have this lawyer part of it where it's like you would think a lawyer is like an esteemed, you know, career that wouldn't do something like this. And to exactly. see like a part of the process is like super crazy. It's
so messed up. And yeah, you see that from anyone who has access to immigrants. I mean, you can see it, you know, it's happened in the film industry too. You know what I mean? It's just having access to, you know, immigrant actresses and things they want. Everyone wants to come to America. So there's a million sketchy ways people can take advantage of that want. So, yeah, it is a crazy situation out there, crazy world. So,
what made you want to write about it? It was like the fact that it kind of took you down a rabbit hole. Like, this shit happens, and then you just
100%.
Were like, this is a great topic to write about.
Yeah, 100%. Because we started, you know, starting writing your story, and you know, I'm hearing this from Kaylin. I want to get her own specific immigration story, and know that I want to work with her on this. And then you start learning all these other things, and you're like, this is just so interesting. I feel like other people hopefully will be interested in this, and maybe, you know, can take other people down rabbit holes too. Because the more we learn about the reality of what's really going on, instead of this sort of like fictitious Hollywood type of, you know, the way movies can present it in certain ways, you know what I mean? So we really just try to keep it really serious and really realistic, you know, and just keep it subtle, which is usually what it is. People are usually, the most evil people are just having casual everyday conversations. And that's what's the scariest stuff. So hopefully it makes for some entertaining film and hopefully some entertaining, you know, stuff people might get interested in and want to learn more about.
Yeah, it's also shot really well, man. I got to tell you, like, I am huge on just like how films look, you know. That's like a big part of this, you know. And most people don't really kind of think about the visuals a lot, you know, but it's like I love when directors get it right. And it's like you kind of chose like really good points to do close-ups and kind of show everything and kind of build like what's happening. Like, you know, I won't say too much about what the movie, but there's two innocent bystanders that get killed right at the top. And it's like, you have this great shot where it's like a story of just blood on a window. And then you just, you're wondering, wait, you're piecing it together. You're like, oh, there's only one. Oh, there's two. Could it be? And then it's, you know, revealed. So it's kind of cool in those little moments that don't have dialogue. You're also telling a story visually. How did you kind of think about shooting this? Did you kind of storyboard it? Did you like have an idea of what you wanted to get out of it? Or was it kind of like impromptu in the moment for each scene?
So I was working with a director of photography, cinematographer, Sten Olsen, who I've worked with on my first film. We met at school. I've worked with him on a ton of stuff. So we have a really great like shorthand. And now at this point, working together on just the visual style. So when we get together, yeah, it's about, you know, we're talking about the visual style of the film, and we have no idea, you know, we start talking. It's like, okay, you know, we can kind of take it anywhere. So what should we do? You know, you have this whole empty canvas, and you're trying to figure out what's going to be, we just start looking at different like art pieces and different things, different desert photography and stuff, and kind of start getting inspired. But then, you know, there's just so much that goes into cinematography, and we really try to make each thing that we're doing, every sort of close up or every sort of angle, whether someone's on the left side or the right side, also have this other story underneath. And the more you can stay consistent about, you know, I mean, you write your own story as long with your consistency. So if that person on the right means something, then, and you do it again and again, you know, throughout the movie, then you're right. Okay. You're saying this means something here. And, you know, you never know, people are going to, you know, notice those things, but it, you know, maybe it's coming on a subconscious level or another layer to the many parts, of a film. So it's really it's cool. I mean, there were some locations on this one we didn't have access to until we got there. So we're looking at pictures online and kind of looking like, okay, you know, like that the place in Sedona, you can see that it's, you know, it's a leasing office. So we're trying to look up the leasing office that, you know, on the little like real estate website, you know what I mean? And being like, okay, that's all we had access to till we got there. So we're looking at that and drawing little diagrams just based off of the three photos that they have online. So that was pretty funny. And was a little nerve wracking because, you know, usually you get to go to a location and spend a whole day planning there and things. And so we didn't. So we get there and we planned on filming things outside first, right when we get there, so that by the time our first lunch break hits, we can then plan the next part of the day, you know, because we get there and everything's a little bit different. So we can plan certain ideas and frames and how things will situate. But the real reality of it is we couldn't fully plan something until we got there for those days. So that was a lot of, yeah, it's nerve-wracking because you're driving there. You're like, God, I hope this all goes well. You know, you got it all planned. You've already spent the money. You're just like, okay, I hope it all goes well. So well, yeah, that can add a lot of excitement.
The funny thing is like, I think as all creators, I think that's part of every part of the process is there's going to be obstacles and you're not going to see them coming. Every record I've made, I just made my eighth record. Every record I've ever made has had some obstacle. This time it was the pandemic. We just finished, you know, recording sessions and then we had to move to mixing because of the pandemic. And, you know, it's like every creative endeavor has these obstacles. What would you say was your biggest obstacle through this process?
Our biggest obstacle for sure was we were facing obviously difficulties as anyone can face when you're doing something on a lower budget. That can, you know, be true with music too. Obviously it's going to be easier with, you know, you see certain high profile bands get, you know, but I'm sure even then they face, you know, obstacles in the creative process, or is it just smooth sailing? You know, they get in the studio and they're just like, it's just, everyone's got to have, yeah, that's, I think, you know, that's what's going to create the great art. But, you know, yeah, since we're on such a tight string budget and we want to shoot in some of these interesting locations to keep the film looking different, sometimes these low budget independent films will shoot in one location because that's, you know, okay, that's just going to be easy and all we have, you know what I mean? And so I tried not to write that way. I tried not to think, but you got to keep in mind on the budget, you know, you can start writing, all right, we got like the dragon coming in or whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's like some stuff is just unavailable to you or the big, you know, whatever it is. The big scene, a bunch of visual effects and stuff. You got to keep that in mind. You know, you can't just kind of go free. So, but I tried to, you know, at least let myself, not get boxed in by the budget and be like, okay, now let's just keep it inside. It'll be easier and it'll be just, you know, everyone will just have a better time and we'll get more sleep. You know, that's obviously not going to lead to something interesting and, you know, different for people to watch. So going to these locations and really going on location is challenging because you're fighting the elements, you're shooting out in, you know, in the hot, where we shot in the summer. So it's really hot in Arizona in the summer.
Like 110 and so over there.
Oh yeah. Luckily Sedona was a little bit better than like Phoenix, but you know, the equipment's getting hot. So like even just the computer technology is getting hot inside the camera, but the physical equipment's getting hot where we can't hold it anymore. So there's just moments like, you know, things like we got to deal with that. Things we didn't expect, for sure in that regard. I mean, I've lived in Arizona my whole life and you just still can't fathom how hot it actually gets. You're like, oh yeah, we'll be fine. You know, just everyone in shorts, watch out for your seatbelt. You know, you'll be fine. And, so that's challenging. And then we wanted to film up in the mountains in California for the final, few sort of big scenes when she knows she's eventually going to this guy's compound sort of ranch, and we want to have sort of a bit of some action material there, shootout and stuff. So we got to kind of be isolated so we don't have to deal with anyone, because we're doing a lot of this guerrilla and trying to stay under the radar.
It's amazing that you did a feature that way. That's what's so awesome. It's like it's a feature and it's done well. You see that right away. You know, it's like that's the hardest thing. Like, you know, I've been to a bunch of film festivals for various projects, and it's like everybody always says to finish the movie, that's the reward. You know, just the fact that you got it done, because taking on such a huge endeavor, like making a movie, is such an obstacle in and of itself. So the very fact that you were able to finish it and nothing, you know, went too out of the way where it was like, oh my God, this is going to just crash and burn. Man, that's the biggest accomplishment. Like, did you have a moment when you were editing where you were like, we have the movie? You know, like you had to have been like, Eureka, or did you go through several kind of months or weeks of just the editing process to figure out what it was that your movie was?
Yeah, we had a couple, I mean, you know, it always starts off with a longer length, you know what I mean? Then it eventually will get to, I don't know if that ever, the opposite ever happens, but it's almost always too long. And then, you know, you're sort of getting to what the best part of it is. I wonder the movie that just is like perfect amount of footage, put it in the editing bay, and that's, they filmed, not an extra moment was filmed, you know, it was the most efficient film of all time. Yeah. I wonder, you know, what film was that? But the reality for our film, yeah, we filmed, you know, an extra length, a couple scenes here and there while I'm writing. I think, you know, we need, and I go, you know what, this look right here alone will say these four lines. Let's, you know, we can just get rid of that. And, you know, we want to make this enjoyable and not a slog, you know what I mean? Where you're watching like, fuck, when's this going to get going? Or when's this going to end, which is even worse. So, yeah, I mean, there was a moment though, you know, I mean, it never feels good until you're completely, you get it. Cause you know, you're just all the way up until watch number 350. You're like, okay, now my notes are down to three notes. Now my notes are down to two notes, one note. Wow. And you're like, okay, we got it. You know what I mean? Cause there's just, so yeah, it, but there was a moment where I saw a certain cut, that I was like, okay, you know, with that scene gone, this scene gone, this just is now feeling like the right length. I'm not feeling like it's too long here or too long here. We've got it. At least, yeah. And our story has not been, you know, affected, and it looks great. So yeah, there's a moment. I hope that, you know, clicks for any person endeavoring in a film, you know, where you're just like, all right, yeah, this looks good. I think, you know, and then you just leave it up to the fates after that, you know.
Did you take more out of act two? Act two is usually the one that gets trimmed the most because it needs the most kind of hacking here and there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's when, you know, that's when you're going to get your conversations.
You're like, I want to put everything in there. And then it's like you realize, okay, this is starting to drag, or there's too much, or it's becoming too elusive, or, you know, whatever it is. So I always feel like act two is the hardest one. Just keep, you know, captivating and keep intriguing. So that had to be, I was like, it has to be act two where you just like, hack it. Let's cut it.
No, for sure. There's always, you just, you know, sometimes just as a filmmaker, you just need to watch the scene enough just because you like it. You know, it probably has to go. And you're just like, okay, I've seen it now like three or four times. I've enjoyed it. It's done. I'm glad we filmed it still. I'm glad it was there in the world. You know, at least we made it. And now let's trim it and no one will ever see it besides me. But, you know, it's, yeah, you just, you know, cut. you just gotta the director's cut. Exactly. Yeah. It's tough sometimes. Sometimes you got to cut a couple shots or things that you like. And it's like, you know, you can't, you know, you try not to be too self-serving. You got to try to keep the whole big picture in mind.
And it was like, was it like suggestions or was it just like instinct? You were like, no, this has got to be like, I'm going to be the artist here and I want to be the one that edits the idea. Or was it kind of like you had half your crew saying, we got to cut this scene, man. Like, it's just too long. Like, what was it that made you just like decide, okay, we need to clean it up, streamline it?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a on each particular part of the process, like same with writing, there's just a few select people, you know, I do bring it to people, you know, like that I'm close with to, you know, read it. Who's going to give me honest, but constructive, good advice. And that's same with editing. You know, you don't want too many opinions. Everyone's going to have a different opinion on everything. You know, you're never going to please anyone no matter what, with the finished film or with this, you know, with every particular edit, even with people who made the movie, you know what I mean? We're all on. So if I went to every crew member and said, hey, what are your thoughts? You know, it's just at the end of the day, I got to make decisions. I got a lot of like, you know, certain feedback and I'm like, and if I hear a good idea is a good idea. Like, I'm going to take it for sure. I don't give shit where it comes from. Like, it's just, yeah, that's a great idea. yeah, so I don't know. It's it is tough though. You got to be the one. You got to just have that sort of one voice in the project. You know, at the end of the day, even though it can be challenging, and you got to make the decision, and you got to just live with it and go, okay.
See, I respect that so much, because it's like, man, there's so many times where I'll collaborate with another artist on a project, and it's like a lot of suggestions you can tell are by the trends that are happening in the marketplace. And to me, I'm like, yo, those trends mean nothing to me. Like, let's make something so ridiculously good that it kind of like makes its own trend, and that's what creates so much hysteria behind it. So
absolutely.
I respect an artist so much when they're like, when they're driven to the vision of the film and the story, and they're able to make those decisions like as they're making the art. Because, you know, as you get more people funding your movies, you're going to have more people telling you, yo, this scene's got to go. Yo, this character, we don't really like, you know, we did some like brainstorming and you know, there's a consensus that we don't like this one character being male, you know, or whatever it is. And it's like,
yeah,
it's so ridiculous. So I love, you know, when you see the Quentin Tarantino, I already know from your movie that you're a big Quentin Tarantino fan, because I could see just the way you broke up all the scenes and the acts of the movie. I'm like, this guy definitely loves Quentin Tarantino, and just for the gore aspect, you know. But, you know, when you see somebody that has like kind of a vision for film and dialogue and scenes and character development and just interactions on a subject matter that may be, you know, not normal. Those are the movies that tend to be some of the best movies I think made. So I love that your voice is so much of a driving force in it. Who are some of the people that like were in part of the creative process that you were able to kind of bounce off of, that you kind of felt like see the same things? Or were there people that were in that, you know, that two or three groups of people that you felt like you sometimes had to go up against them in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, and like you said, as the sort of, you get, you know, bigger funding and different things, obviously you're going to start getting those like overseeing hands, because there is a lot of money going into it. And if I was them, I, you know, you can almost kind of understand, even though as an artist, you know, you don't want to be messed with and have your thing. Because again, you're not trying to create the same old stuff that might have sold once, but like, you know, and what, you know, what's the point? And also, is that what we're trying to do here? Are we trying to be the one, like, is this the one where we're just going to like sell out? Like, let me know when the sellout project is, right, and we'll figure out what that shit is. And we'll go do that and not care as much around the board. You know, everyone wants to, you know, cash in whatever it is, but like, no, I mean, we made this movie, you know, at the level, we didn't go kill ourselves in the desert, you know, to then you get to the editing and you're like, all right, time to sell out. What's going to make this, what's going to sell, you know, what's going to be sexy. We need to go pick up, some, you know, different scenes that are going to help sell this thing. Like, nah. So that is great for doing an independent movie, because hopefully you don't have those on this level. If you do, then you're working with some maniacs, because I mean, that's why you do stuff where you're not, you know, getting paid that much or at all. You do it because, yeah, you're trying to make something special. And hopefully, you know, there's a lot of people who go on to bigger films and they do maintain that voice, and somehow they navigate the, you know, the studios, the money head people, and, you know, the different aspects. And you do see them come up with original, really great art. And that's in all fields. You know what I mean? Somehow some people are figuring out how to balance that. Right. That's definitely a goal. You know what I mean? For sure. I have really close, great collaborators to answer your question. Chase Cargill, who plays Kellen, the hitman, you know, was one pushing this project, encouraging it all the way. And so I have to thank him for his, you know, just continual, you know, just driving force. Sometimes, you know, it's great to have other people who are encouraging you along the way. And he's somebody who just, he's, again, just being his theater background and things, he reads so many plays, involved in so much playwright storytelling, just is, you know, very knowledgeable there. So he just knows just classic and movie structure and movie storytelling really well, which we do a lot of, little bit of breaking away from that in certain things. You know, we'd have to tell the story in multiple parts. which is a really great device. I do really like the director, Quentin Tarantino.
I knew it. I just with the way you shot it, I was like,
Many, yeah. You know, he's great. I really do like him. He was not an influence on this film particularly. A modern influence more would be somebody like Taylor Sheridan, who did this movie called Wind River, which was a really great modern crime movie. But then, you know, looking at a lot of older movies and not terribly old, you know, that are split up into sort of different parts. A lot of interesting Westerns are split up into multiple parts. So I really like that idea of storytelling. I mean, you know, you get it in a TV show a lot nowadays, too. The freedom of, you know, you get in episode one, you get an idea of a character and how they might be. And then in episode two, you can show the first scene of something, you know, a completely different segment, and you get this whole different perspective, right? So that was a really just a real big turn on when it comes to writing. I was just like, there's a great freedom here because I don't have to keep this sort of, you know, consistent flow. I can just, okay, part one's over. Now let's go jump into someone else's thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, people definitely will see, you know, that done in Tarantino movies. I mean, I think he's done it in the last like four besides, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So, you know, I mean, he's probably the most popular person who's done it, but, there's a lot of great old film, like City of God, which is one of my favorite films, does really well. Yeah. And then breaking up the storyline. So, yeah, so he kept me chased. That kept me honest about, you know, at least, you know, we knew when we were kind of breaking traditional storytelling beats and things and trying to just do, you know, again, weave a little bit into the lines to try to tell something new and try to trick the audience a little bit. And hopefully we do that. We try to keep people surprised. And that's hard to do nowadays. It's hard to surprise anyone with anything because everyone's so smart and there's so much TV. So, you know,
everyone's an expert.
Tricks. Well, everyone is an expert in everything, especially, you know, everyone knows everything in every aspect of film and art. And that's okay. Everyone deserves their opinion. But yeah, it is hard to trick an audience. You know what I mean? Watching stuff with my, girlfriend and she's really good at it. She'll just guess like the end of a TV, you know, like, oh, I know where this is going and then get like, okay, you know, I'm supposed to be like the writer here. I didn't even get that. You know what I mean? This is like brilliant. So audiences are really getting really good at guessing. I try to go along with the ride, but people want to know, hey, how's this shit ending? Let me guess how this ends. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and just trying to guess it from the end. Oh, but I know how this is going to end. It's going to die. Oh, okay, great. Oh, no, he's going to live. He's going to live or he's going to die. One or the other, one of those is going to happen. I was like, okay, you're a genius. And yeah, so it's tough. It's tough to trick the audience. So hopefully we did that with, you know, with certain parts of this.
It's constantly like you're just pulling us down the rabbit hole. We're going to play the trailer in a little bit. Cool. What did you shoot it on? Did you use a RED or did you use a certain camera that you're just like, oh my God, I love this piece of gear?
I am devoted to the Alexa. We've been using the Alexa Mini, and we had some great super speed lenses and Primo Prime lenses that we used throughout the shoot. Got those courtesy of Panavision. Thank you, Panavision, Los Angeles. It's definitely the nicest sort of set I've gotten to film on, you know, shooting with some of these top, again, you know, you don't want, it's tough because, you know, camera gear is really expensive and it's frustrating. So we're lucky on this film to get, you know, we got really a really nice camera package and things, but it's tough because you don't want people to turn it on and just immediately know where you fit in level wise into the budgets. You know what I mean? Just based off of your camera and your look, and people can tell. People are, again, very smart these days. They know, especially with Instagram and stuff, they know like a nice camera, you know, they know just how nice photography looks and how that levels out. So, you know, you don't want to immediately be put into a box because again, you want to, you know, you're trying to draw in different audience members and get people away from some, you know, watch the superhero stuff, watch the Star Wars stuff, and then come over here and watch some of this stuff and check it out. But yeah, if it doesn't look good, people are out, which I understand. Yeah. You want to, needs
does
to
that take you out of movies when you see it. Like if like, would you see a great story that's shot on a pretty shitty camera? Would that keep you captivated? Would you just be like, oh my God, they couldn't get any camera better than this, you know?
No, it's it depends, I guess. Because, you know, there's a director named Sean Baker who directed a movie on an iPhone. Steven Soderbergh shot on an iPhone. But it's a bit tricky because, you know, they're getting, like, the iPhone, but then they're hooking up these big lenses to it. So it does kind of still look – it's not, like, just, like, you and me pulling out our iPhones type of look. Right. But they're great storytellers. So hopefully it does come down to that. But, again, I'm, like, a film nerd. I love movies and lots of, you know, different types of movies. So, yeah, I'm going to be, like, okay with, you know, this Steven Soderbergh movie shot on an iPhone. Will a regular audience member – probably not. You know, again, I'm trying to just get people out there to see different things, see more independent films, see more foreign films. You know what I mean? Because that'll just get everyone's sort of expectations sort of, you know, branching out a little bit. You know, if you keep watching the same old stuff, then, you know, you won't see much.
Well, let's play the trailer right now.
Let's check it out.
Echoes of Violence.
Drop your gun and step away from her.
They're gonna go to your house and then they're gonna go to your families. It's what they do.
I was scared of Anthony, Marika. And you should be too.
Great trailer, man.
Here we go. Awesome.
And now, did your editor do the trailer? Did you kind of edit the trailer? Did you guys do it together? Like, how do you make your movie story captivating in 30 seconds like that?
The 30 seconds is easy. Regular, so we kind of consider that our teaser. We will have like a full trailer coming out soon once we start releasing the movie, because right now we're at Cinequest Film Festival. We premiered, I guess, on Saturday, and it's the virtual festival kind of going for a week. So people can check out the movie now, and then eventually we'll release, hopefully, you know, to some sort of online type of, on demand streaming platforms or whatever. But, I edited that teaser the teasers, like short teasers are easy. A full trailer where you kind of got to get in the bits of the story and a little bit more dialogue and things are really hard. You can hire companies to do it who are like, that's their job. These guys make trailers, all the trailers you see online and stuff. Like there's like five houses in like LA and some in Canada and England. Like they're doing like most of the trailers and they're great at it. But we are putting our money elsewhere. So I'm buckling in and trying to get these teasers done. So I edited that one and I thought it looked okay. Yeah, I thought it was good.
That's great.
It was
great.
Yeah. So it's challenging. You like, what do you want to show in there? What do you want to, you know, trying to entice different audiences, but we think we were a little gun heavy in the teaser. Like every shot's got, some people, that might be like, you know, again, we're like, okay, is it enough guns? Come on, middle America. Are you in? No, it's just, I think because there's a lot to the story. Again, it's not just a bunch of action and stuff. Well, there is there's a lot of exciting moments, but not it's, we really try to look at these characters and one woman's blazing glory to revenge and getting into just really the truth of the matter. Why, you know, what would it take to really, you know, make you want to go, you know, take revenge on someone? Revenge is kind of just now seems like this kind of silly word that, you know, we hear in movies, but, you know, really just go, you know, take justice into your own hands and then on different characters, what would it take for you, you know, to go have somebody killed, you know, and really try to like get to the root of why a human being would even do that. And and try to find, are there any good reasons? Probably not. But, you know, maybe someone, you know, who makes a bad decision can kind of come back. We really try to look at a lot of the different relationships and that can be affected through sort of this streamline of dark incidents that occurred to one person that are having a ripple effect to all these other people.
And tell me about, like, okay, so the movie was finished maybe a couple months ago or recently. How did you decide to release it in the current marketplace? Like, right now, it's like the hardest thing about filmmakers like yourself, you make this great movie and it's like movie theaters aren't even open. I mean, that's just crazy. You know, it's like you can't even go and enjoy your own film at a film festival in a theater because of what's happening with the pandemic. Like, what's the goal, or how do you feel people should view this? This film, or what's the trajectory that you're hoping for? Is it streaming? Is it you want to wait and see if we get a network or maybe a movie house that gets behind it? What are your hopes for it?
Well, we decided just not to necessarily wait around for too much, you know, certain things to be figured out COVID-wise and stuff. In terms of film festivals and things, you know, so we're part of this virtual film festival. Sure, would we like to be there, but, like, you know, obviously there's a million things we'd probably like to not happen, you know what I mean, just like COVID in general. And so, you know, we just roll with the punches, and so we're just kind of trying to get it out there and move alongside the current sort of market and how things are. Some people say that there's, you know, a lack of movies out there. I don't know how they think that, because I have like a list of like 20 movies that I need to watch, but people are like, yeah, I'm dying for things to watch. So, you know, maybe, you know, there's a little bit less things being made because during the pandemic, studios couldn't be filming too much. So we're just kind of rolling with the punches. We got some film festivals hopefully we'll be a part of in the summer that might be in person with vaccinations rolling out and stuff. But we really, yeah, just want to get it out there, you know, on streaming nowadays is, funny enough, almost the best way, unless you're gonna have a big theatrical release,
right?
You know what I mean? But most independent movies don't. 99.5% independent movies don't have a big international release or theatrical release, just because you know, the expense that has to be put forward, you know, that's usually for people trying to recoup millions of dollars, and that's the way to do it, you know what I mean? You got to get in the theaters right now. I don't know how they're doing that. They're not. So what we got to do is get it on some good streaming sites. And so once we finish our film festivals, we got our we partnered with some cool people and a really great company hopefully get it on some streaming sites. Hopefully some ones that, you know, everyone's got access to, and people check it out, see it on there, and get as many people to watch it.
Festival in Portugal called Fest. I don't know if you submitted it for that, but it's called New Directors. I'll send you the link for it. But,
yeah, please do.
I had one of my projects. I'm working on an animated project, and it got into that festival. And, like, cool. You know, you know how film festivals are, where it's like, it's roll the dice. You could be in New York, and you think it's this big thing, and you go there, and it's, like, really not a big thing, you know? So,
yeah.
Like, going to Portugal was like a real gamble, and I ended up going there because I saw some of the panel speakers, and I was like, all right, they got pretty big panel speakers. I'm going to go and just see what happens. And, man, it was unbelievable. They actually bussed 300 kids from around Portugal for the screening of the animated short that I did. And
that is so cool.
Which is amazing. So, like, there were 300 people just waiting to watch the movie, and you know, like, all the movies were, like, super supported. And you're in this small town in Portugal, and the city just, you know, loves American films or international films. And I definitely can't say enough great things about it. Of course, it'd be awesome if it gets to Sundance, too. That can be a little political. But how do you kind of navigate as to what film festivals you want to get it into? Or is it, you know, more suited for one film festival over another? What are the film festivals you're kind of, you know, hoping to get it into?
Well, on this, I'm still learning so much about what you do once you have a finished film. You know what I mean? Like, I went to school for filmmaking and spent a lot of time learning on how to make a film, which is obviously very important. But, you know, it's funny, they don't teach you kind of how to get a film going in the real world, and they don't tell you what to do with it once you have it. So much of it is a learning curve. I am still learning a lot about film festivals. I mean, it's crazy how much I don't know about that. It's just a whole world. I really try to, you want to kind of, some people really love the business side of things. I really, for me, I don't know. I like to kind of just buckle on, like, let's figure out what I'm writing next and kind of try to stay in the creative realm. Cause it is interesting to me though. And I respect film festivals so much, but I really have no clue. It's so, they're always like, yeah, this one's bigger than this one. And you don't go to this one. And it's like, that one seems great. And that one seems really cool. That's in a pretty area. Let's go. Who gives a shit? Let's go. And they're like, no. So I don't know. So I trust the knowledge of people. That's why, you work with publicists and things. Because they just, have this knowledge that, only comes with great experience, I guess. So I'm hoping we I'd love to do, like, for my first film, The Axiom, we went to a couple really great film festivals internationally. I went to a crazy one in Mexico called Ferratum International Film Festival, and they, like, bus you in from Mexico City, and you're there in this village, and, like, on the first night, it's, like, thunderstorms, like, the driest thunderstorms the whole time, and it's, like, again, it's all this horror film festival, and so they're, like, and the first night, you're everyone, they're, like, passing out masks and, like, scary masks, not, like, your regular creepy masks, and they give everyone a torch and, like, this fire, and everyone just kind of goes around in your scary masks and your scary costumes, and you just walk the entire, like, ancient city, and everyone's got this, like, talk about a fire hazard. I mean, this is like, they just give you the torch. Here's your torch and here's your thing. And I'm like, oh my God. But it was so cool. And just like, I literally never experienced anything like that. Didn't know something like that was out there and existing. So, I mean, that was really cool. We're definitely not applicable for that just because they're a hardcore horror situation. But, and then I went to a film festival that I swear, I don't know, I'm gonna have to claw my way back because I had the best time there, called Sitges International Film Festival. And they're a very big, sort of fantastic type of film festival in Spain, right outside of Barcelona in the city of Sitges. And I fell in love with that place. So, again, I didn't even know that city existed. And now I'm like, God, I hope we go back. Do we fit in? I'll edit in some more music and some.
What's cool, too, it's like film festivals. When you get in with your first or second movies, whatever it is, they cultivate you. Like, they'll actually, push you to the top, whereas a lot of film festivals are just waiting for you to get famous and then, have major backing, and then you get into the South by Southwest or the Sundances. It's really sure. – I was, like, so blown away by these small international festivals because you really see that they're getting crazy good movies and – great panels and things like that too, but also just the amount of talent, is in these small cities that everybody comes from all over the world. I mean, I was like rubbing shoulders with like Oscar winners from like Bohemian Rhapsody and just crazy shit. But what I really found, like sometimes the most commercial film festivals, even just you're like saying the same thing. You went to these two small film festivals and had these amazing experiences. It just makes me like want to pursue more of those kind of like, smaller film festivals because you're going to have more of an experience where your film will be really, it'll resonate, you'll have an audience and like, do you have ideas for your future projects that you kind of like figure out like, okay, this is the market I want to kind of reach, or is it kind of like, you always want to, the niche markets, you always want to just make sure you're hitting those?
It has got to be different for every project, I think. And and again, maybe this goes to the same thing I was talking about, but I don't like to, I don't know, maybe I should be thinking about this beforehand, but like when it comes time to a new project, I'm like, okay, let's just, again, we start from ground zero. You know what I mean? Maybe keep an eye on the stuff, but sometimes keeping an eye too far ahead. And again, I could be completely wrong, but sometimes for me, keeping too far of an eye ahead, you can mess with you a little bit and make you want to then fit your thing, your project into sort of, you know, bubbles of, you know, maybe if it's a little bit more like this, then Sundance will like it. Or it's a little more like that, then South by Southwest will like it. And I don't even know what that means. What you know, Sundance obviously has a type of movie they like, and I've been there 3 times, and I love the film festival. But, you know, to go into it in that with that mindset or any sort of aspect with sales, maybe, you know, yeah, I mean, that's up to the producers, you know what I mean? And if, you know, if that hat needs to be put on for that time being, but the moment that hat's taken off, you know, you got to just, because writing a good screenplay and hopefully, you know, you can do enough to it to make it great if you can spend enough time with it and really work hard on it. That is its own thing within itself and just deserves so much time and takes that much time. And then directing, once you get that funding and you're ready to start going, is so much on its own too, that it's hard to think too far ahead with certain things. You know what I mean? Like that, because you don't want to be affected. Like there's certain times where I didn't want to be affected by certain films or filmmakers. So I don't watch them during the filming of, I don't watch a lot of new, movies when I'm making movies. I don't watch, you know, I watch a lot of, that's when I'm like watching a lot of old movies and things. And get going to that list, because you just don't want to, you don't want to be influenced, or you don't want to be like, you know, you don't want to be like, oh God, I love this now, you know, then you look back at your project and you're like, it's basically just a memoir of all the shit you watched at that time. You're like, first act's like so similar to that show. And the second act, like, what the fuck were you watching then? Because it's completely different. So, you know, I do, it's, you know, you got to turn it off sometimes. There's a lot to turn out just to try to make something original and unique and, you know, and just, and feel confident enough to do so. Forget that battle. You know what I mean? You got to just kind of go in ready to go. And, so you can try to make something, original. And filmmaking takes so many people to make it. So to even Crazy. Keep an original vision on its own is also a challenge too, because you're pulling in and you have to collaborate. It's not just, you know, you're not just, you know, Monet going in and painting, and you're just the one guy you got to deal with. You know what I mean? You got to deal with many men and many different women. And it's, that's part of the great part of it, but that's, you know, also a challenge. So yeah, it's tough.
And who are some of your biggest influences as far as, you said Spielberg for Jaws, and you mentioned Tarantino, just list off a couple other directors that you're just fascinated by, either international directors or, you know, any storytellers.
Yeah, 100%. I am very influenced by, I love South Korean cinema, and I've been a longtime fan of Park Chan-wook and Jin Ho-bong. That's influenced me a lot. Just very unique, different type of stories being told. And it's great. You're now starting to see a little bit more of American audiences sort of taking that in.
Parasite.
With last year, Parasite winning, you know, it's so cool. And, I like, Quentin Tarantino is great, but he's not an influence, because if anything, I feel like a lot of filmmakers, myself included, you spend a lot of time going, you know, I like you so much that, you know, and you're really unique, but like you're the only person like you, you know what I mean? So just like, please go over there. Like, so, you know, just like, you're so, you know, you're so unique and interesting. I almost can't look at you. And there's other filmmakers, like Paul Thomas Anderson's probably been one of my biggest influences, because he cares so much about the writing process, almost sometimes to the detriment of his own speaking to the directing process, even though I think he's such a great director. He's just so about the writing, and puts writing on such a pedestal, because that's just the original conception. You know what I mean? It's just, there's nothing until there's a screenplay.
That's the foundation.
Blank.
Foundation, right.
Yeah, it's just complete nothingness, and you have to then create something that will, in every film you've ever seen, you know, started with just no idea, and someone sat down and started typing, and, you know, just what cool, amazing things can come from that. I just really respect his writing style. There Will Be Bloods, like one of my favorite movies of all time, for sure, just up there.
I've
just
abandoned my child.
It's the best. It's like, you know, I went and saw that movie in high school when I was like, you know, I think before I, you know, started later becoming sort of like a, you know, really into films and movie, you know, snob-esque, you know what I mean? I was just a regular high school kid, and we had ditched school. We're going to see a movie, and the only thing in theaters at this certain theater that we could walk to was that. And I was like, we're looking at it, and we're like, it's about an oil man. Okay. Sounds terribly boring. This is going to be okay. Like what, you know, I guess we'll go, this is better than class, I guess. So we'll go in, and to just have a seemingly such boring premise and to be turned into the cool, like such a just interesting, there's a lot of people for, you know, even just rate, you know, just, you don't even have to be into movies to just, you know, people who like that and love that story. And just, again, you know, that's so quotable, the performance, the music,
Yep.
So yeah, that's really inspiring because, you know, that could have been very boring, and how not boring at all was it? So yeah, those are a couple. There's so many. I get influenced all the time, just even by little things. You know, you see something. There's a lot of really great movies out now. A lot of, you know, movies that you know are kind of circulating the like Oscar stuff that you know, different foreign films and things that I didn't expect to like. Film Minari that's circulating around now.
On my list, man. I just watched
it. It is so good.
And Minari's next, man. So I'm so excited. Yeah.
My favorite of the year, though, has to be I think Minari is going to be like maybe best picture. It's going to get the best picture because it's just like it is that classic best film. You kind of know what the Oscars, that best film. But my favorite film of the year that you've got to see if you haven't, it's called Another Round. It's with Mads Mikkelsen, I forget the director's name. He's got to be on my permanent radar because he is so great, writer director. It's a Danish film, and I think it's nominated for. He's nominated for best foreign film, and he's nominated for best director. Mads Mikkelsen, who was the villain in Casino Royale.
Oh yeah,
and
he's
Hannibal.
I saw this. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You got to watch it. It is so great.
That movie's
and
fantastic.
What a cool movie. Yeah, it's very surprising, and yeah, another one where I went into this being like, oh, is this? I'm just so worried about being bored. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just so little time left in life. I feel relatively young. I still just see it ticking away. If you're watching something boring, and
it's
man,
funny. I find myself going backwards. Like I'm watching old movies that I haven't seen before. Like old classics, like big movies. So I'm like, oh my God, this fell under the radar. I've got to watch this. So like, I have like a Netflix, like movies that are, you know, still being shipped to me that I'm like, you know, what's the classic? You know, just because like, then it's like, when you're looking at Netflix, anything can catch your attention and you go down that rabbit hole. When you have a movie sent to you, you're like, oh, I need to watch this. This movie is like a classic Academy Award winning movie from like 40 years ago. So it's like, it just keeps you like looking at classics and why it was shot or what made it, you know? So like, I'm going backwards because there's a lot of stuff like in episodic, you know, the episodic world that are great. But yeah, some of the movies that are being celebrated right now, I'm like, I don't think are as awesome as some of the movies that like I grew up with. You know, I grew up with Back to the Future and Jaws and, you know, Neverending Story and, you know, just it's crazy. So like,
it's hard. Well, especially in that fantasy element, yeah. I mean, God, things used to be. That was like the big, you know, studio narrative. You know, we're looking for the fantasy because that's what brings the world together. It's the fantasy ideas, you know, and like science fiction. I like Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, Jaws. You know, like. They all had that element of fantasy that was so respected back then. And I don't know. I feel like, yeah, the only fantasy stuff that's given any hype these days is like superhero stuff or Star Wars stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like, how can we get those stuff that, you know, grew up with the, you know, really original movies that have that sort of fantasy, you know, whether it goes sci-fi or whether it goes
whatever. Shawshank Redemption is like one of my favorite movies.
Well, then there's, yeah. Yeah,
it's like you see a movie like that, and it's like, man, I couldn't even tell you a movie that's like that movie now. You know, that's that for like sure. Character driven, where it's just like unbelievable. So, you know, what I liked
there's
about
no
your
movie,
movie
like
well, it's like you actually have something like it, you know, like what like I do this show. I've been doing this show for about 7 years. It's like I've had big budgeted films come through here. I've had indie projects. You definitely have a take on how you want to tell a story. And how you want to put it together that is captivating, man. Like, you can definitely tell you got something.
Thank you, man.
I want to ask you, when you're writing and directing, when do you take the hats off? When is the writer hat off when you're directing? And when is the director hat off when you're writing?
That's a good question. They're never necessarily, they never kind of come off because you're still writing in the editing room. You know what I mean? And we, I do be, it's the nice thing about being the writer is when you're on set, you can change things without being like, hey, is it cool if we change this? You know, what's the contracts? Yeah. What's the contract say there? So we can change a thing. And I like to be collaborative on that part. I'm not speaking of our admired Quentin Tarantino. He's funny because he's like, I pay the actors to say the fucking lines, you know, exactly how they're going. And again, that's great. And I'm glad you do. But I like, I don't know, I just can never be like, hey, say it exactly like this. If it's not like coming out of your mouth, you know, that right way, or, you know, I'm down to change little things. Or if you have an idea, again, the collaborative process, you might have a better idea than I had. So we had a lot of, you know, cool lines just kind of come out of the moment. Or maybe, you know, hey, someone says, look, why don't you just give me the chance to say this without saying it? You know what I mean? Like this line here, like, what if I just like look at, you know, my dad and we just have this moment and that, you know, that can just be here. And I'm like, that's a great idea. I probably wrote that, you know, not thinking that, you know, oh, we'll be able to find, you know, an actor who is as like truthful and talented enough to, you know, say something with their eyes or with their, you know, so then you write extra and then you go, oh, wow, this person's so good and can bring so much just a life and a story living in their being, in their eyes. And you can just see it when a really good actor is working on set in front of you and you're like, wow. I mean, I give so much respect to acting because it's just so challenging with all the different stuff that's in your face and cameras and you're self-conscious and to block all that out and just to like be there with somebody is so hard, and so amazing when you see it happen. So, there's many times where it's just like, we don't need that. We don't need that. Like, let's try it. And maybe we'll do it both ways just so I have that option. And then, you know, in the editing room, but the writer part doesn't necessarily go away. And, you know, in editing, there's a lot of filmmakers who, you know, who don't write. They're director editors. You know what I mean? So that's their writing language. They know how to write in the editing room. And that's why you'll see them maybe editing their stuff themselves or be really heavy handed in that process. I respect it all, but I really tried to get as much figured out the beginning on the page. And then, you know, we'll just kind of go from there. But yeah, I don't think they ever necessarily come off, you know, I mean, look, it's 2 years later. Is the director hot off now? Even, I mean, it'll never end. You're living with the film forever. That's the cool thing. It's like that, but it's also like the kid who like never leaves home. You're just like, are you gonna get a job and leave me alone, or am I just like gonna babysit you forever? So yeah.
Well, Nicholas, you've been a wonderful guest. You're a talented cat. Where can people find any of your movies or this movie in particular? And where can people find you and follow you either on social media or whatnot?
Oh, yeah, I'm on Instagram, you know, nicholaswoods.co. But check out the film on cinequest.org. Just Google Cinequest. You can see the film right now. It's going all through the week. $4 for a ticket to watch it at Cinequest, which is super cool. A lot of other really good movies there also to check out. Viggo Mortensen, one of my favorite actors. Freaking Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, man. He's got a film there. So let's go. I'm excited to see that. And please come check it out and support some indie film. It's a good awesome. Time.
Well, thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. You have an unlimited pass, man. Anytime you have a project, you email me and I'd love to have you on and showcase your work, man. It's really something special.
You're the man. Thank you so much.
I really did. So thank you again, and keep making movies, man. Don't let the industry stop you. Don't let anything stop you. Keep making movies. All right.
Hell no. Thank you so much, man. We won't. We can't let them. Can't let them stop us. Right.
That's right.
Got to keep going.
Can't stop. Won't stop.
Get it. We won't stop. No way. All right. Yes. All right. The life we chose.
Yeah, man. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, and we'll see you again. You know, I look forward to more films from you, and thanks for making this movie, man. It really was something special.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate the chance to talk with you. It's awesome.
Awesome, man. High five. High five.
Yes, virtual five.
That's right, man. Thanks, man. And check out this movie, everybody. Echoes of Violence, right? Right. All right. We'll see you here soon. See you here next week.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.